Good morning, and thanks for tuning in to 88.5 KRFY. This is our new show we're calling Community Connections. We're airing Community Connections two times each week on Tuesdays and Thursdays at 8 a.m. That's when we normally would be airing our live current events program, The Morning Show. But thanks to the coronavirus outbreak, our live morning show is on hold until it's safe again to bring guests into our studio. So what we've cooked up instead is this show, Community Connections, an interim show in which we're recording interviews we've had with different community members via phone or conferencing. I'm Chris Bessler, your host for today's show. We have two segments today. For the first 20 minutes, we're talking with Dr. Hans Hurt, emergency room doctor at Bonner General Health, for a local status report on the coronavirus outbreak, plus some advice for personal and community health. Our second segment is about 10 minutes, a talk about the upcoming May 19th primary election with County Clerk Michael Rosedale and Election Supervisor Charlie Worm. Thanks to the coronavirus, all voting in the primary election will be using the absentee ballot process. So there are a lot of changes for voters to know about in this upcoming election, which does have some important races. So with that, here's my conversation recorded from Monday with Dr. Hans Hurt of Bonner General Health. Dr. Hurt, thank you for speaking with us.
Yeah, certainly. Help keep the community educated and ready to fight this pandemic as it comes to our community.
Well, to start, can you give us a general status report about how things are going at Bonner General?
Yeah, you know, a lot has changed in this last month. There's been a lot of planning that's gone on and kind of a lot of preparation. So we've got different areas set up within the hospital and kind of improved things that for different types of ventilation to keep things cleaner and to separate patients that would have COVID from patients that wouldn't. And then there's been a lot of changes in what testing's been available. So that's been huge. At this last week, we were able to get an in-house testing done that we should be able to have results on within a few hours. And that is kind of ramping up, which will be really good for all the patients that we admit to the hospital and some of the higher risk community people. And then we still have the other tests that are out there that are a little longer turnaround. So all those changes with the planning, the preparation, and improvement in our testing is really good.
Well, let's talk about the disease itself. If someone is listening in who's not feeling well, what symptoms should they be watching for?
Yeah, so as things go on, we're getting more and more information about what this COVID disease looks like, what presentation people are going to have. So the classic one that we first heard about was like fevers, body aches, and a cough. And there's other people, too, that are presenting that have stuff that's just simple as a headache. Like some younger people, they may not really even have a big fever, and they'll have a headache and feel a little fatigued. Other people, it's affecting more their GI tract, so their belly, and they'll feel nauseous and have belly pain and maybe have some diarrhea with it. So there's a pretty broad spectrum of diseases that we'll see. The one that we hear about that's kind of the most scary is when, you know, people start getting really short of breath and their lungs start to be affected and maybe fill up with fluid. So that's kind of the more classic one where people have the fever and then a cough, and then even about a week after some of those mild symptoms set in is where it gets worse for some people. For some people, it ends up getting better, but some people will get worse after about a week and feel more short of breath as it changes how it affects their lungs.
Well, if somebody thinks they have contracted it, what should they do? I think you probably don't want everybody who thinks they're feeling funny to come down and get tested.
Well, as our testing is changing, I think we're at a point now where we're going to hopefully have enough send out tests for people that, you know, they're not super sick, but they're more worried and they have a fever, they have a cough, or they're feeling more fatigued, where we should have enough tests now where they could call in and kind of see at the status for that day. I haven't gotten the update report today about our exact numbers that we have, but we are at the point where we'd like the community to come in early when they start to have those symptoms now. And we'll have more testing available to test them as an outpatient. So it may not be something where they'll even enter into the hospital completely, because we're doing a lot of different kind of triage and talking to people, first by the phone, and then we'll have a nurse go out to the parking lot and meet them out there. So it might be something where we can do a lot more testing now, and then send people home to kind of self-isolate at home and act as if they are infected. And then we'll get those test results back in a couple of days so that we can kind of help guide their care from there.
So the actual procedure then would be to ask people to call first if they seriously think they may be involved.
Yeah, because what we're trying to do in the emergency department is to keep some of the contamination in the ED down lower, both to keep the staff safe and to keep the other patients that come in with hand lacerations or hand cuts on their hands and arms and broken arms, just so we can keep the emergency department a little cleaner, a little safer for everybody else. So we're having people call in so we can figure out what their symptoms are and if it's, you know, concerning enough where they need to come in and get assessed, or if it's something where we can have a nurse come out and talk to in the parking lot. And if it's just really a test that they're interested in and they're worried about having the disease, but they don't really feel so sick that they need to get fully examined in the emergency department, then we can coordinate some of that out in the parking lot where that those people, they don't get exposed to some other people that could be sick in the emergency department. And, you know, if they are carriers of the disease, then they won't be spreading it so much in the emergency department. So that's a change from how we normally do things, but it's designed to kind of help keep everybody a little safer.
Mm-hmm. So speaking about the disease, how infectious is it, and what's the main way that it's being transmitted that we know at this point?
So the main way that we know it's transmitted is droplets. So that's when we're speaking and when we're breathing, all those tiny little droplets and kind of moisture that come flying out of our mouth off of our lips when we talk, it's transferred that way. And that's where the 3 to 6 foot area right around us is going to be the most highly contaminated. And that's also where wearing masks is helpful. So the cloth masks, they're going to catch the majority of those droplets. And that's going to slow down the spread that an infected person has in kind of putting out into the air around them. For different things too, when people are really coughing badly or when we're doing different procedures, there's also a bit that goes into even smaller particles that we call airborne. And those float in the air for a lot longer time than what the droplets would. So the droplets come out and those will generally fall to the ground pretty quickly, within a few minutes, where the airborne particles can can hover in the air for a few hours when they're really tiny like that. So those are two ways. There's also some data that's coming out that later on in the disease, our body kind of sheds virus into our stool, into our feces. So that's where the hand washing becomes really important. Hand washing is helpful because it reduces the droplets that are on our hands. Like when we're talking and our hands are in front of us, we're spraying little droplets onto our hands. But also too, as we do different things and go to the bathroom and such, we could be picking up some of the virus that way from going to the bathroom and cleaning. So the hand washing, that's where that is huge to help lower the risk from both of those routes. And the masks are also helpful. We don't have to necessarily worry. I guess about too many other routes right now. Those are the main ones.
Mm-hmm.
And how infectious is it? That's a good question, because how we look at the diseases, there's something that they call the R-naught, which is, it's the R with the zero next to it, which people may have seen as they read different articles out there. When we think of some of the most infectious sorts of diseases out there that we know about, measles is probably one of the highest, and that has a number that's somewhere between 8 to 12. COVID has been thought to be about between 2 to 3 usually, but I've also seen another recent study that puts it higher, from like 3 to 8. So there's a lot of variation in what we see out there, and as this pandemic changes, there's a lot of different estimates happening for the number. To give a comparison to the regular flu, the flu is felt to be at about a 1.5 in that area, between a 1 and a 2 for how easily and highly infectious that is. So this is about, you figure, at least probably twice as infectious as the flu for how it spreads, and maybe even more.
Mm-hmm.
And that R-naught is affected too a lot by when we look at the population and how our social distancing and lockdowns have affected it. we've changed the curve a lot from what the initial estimates were. I see a lot of different frustration from people out there when I read different articles or look at stuff on social media, and people are like, oh, these estimates are off, and people don't know what they're doing with the statistics. And it's like, well, the information is changing so quickly, day to day and week to week. What we're expecting from the disease continually changes too. So we just have to be really flexible and realize that the numbers that all the calculations are done off of are changing. And it's hard to predict in the future, especially with this disease, because what we do today as far as social distancing and lockdowns and shutting schools, what we see right now is in relation to what we did 3 weeks ago. So considering that that's when we started to shut schools down and businesses, restaurants and stuff started closing, that was about 3 weeks ago. So now we're seeing the effects of that today, 3 weeks later, just with how the disease has a long incubation period, averaging 5 days, but up to even 12 to 14 days. And then there's a period of mild symptoms for another 5 to 7 days, and even up to 10 days before people would present to the hospital. That gives us a total of, up to 22 days before we see people actually come to the hospital with more severe symptoms. So that's where this is just, it's a slow disease kind of in how it presents when somebody's infected. And that makes it challenging for a lot of these estimates and epidemiologic curves to see the cause and effect of what's going on.
Mm-hmm. You talked a bit about testing, and you mentioned that there's in-house testing now where the results can be returned in just a few hours. What happens when someone does test positive?
Yeah, so that's going to depend. If the person is still in the hospital, if they got admitted, then the provider that's taking care of them, the physician that's taking care of them, will go in and inform them. And that's going to change how we kind of care for that patient a little bit. Because that's going to change, like, all the protective equipment that the nurses and the staff will be wearing as they go in that room. So when we test somebody and we get a negative result, that's great, because then that kind of lowers everybody's stress threshold a little bit and kind of helps the hospital save on some of the protective equipment that we would wear. Because when the people come in initially, we're wearing all sorts of protective equipment, assuming that they're positive. Now, if somebody is in the community and we test them and we send them home, then we would probably reach out to them if we did the test. And then also the local Panhandle Health should be reaching out to them and coordinating things with them to clarify isolation, as well as to figure out who they've had contact with in the community, so that we can look for more infections within the community and kind of do stronger isolation quarantine around those individuals that could have been infected and could also spread the disease if they have it.
And you might be trying to also determine who they've been in touch with specifically, so they can give a heads up to those folks, I imagine.
Yeah, exactly. And that's where Panhandle Health goes and talks to them about where they've been and areas and, other people that, they could have infected, or that, maybe that they got the infection from, to try and get a better understanding how the disease is moving around in the community. So that's where, we have four people in the county that have tested positive, but really there's, more probably between 500 to 700 people. I hear that Panhandle is watching really closely to see if they have symptoms, or that they're checking in on, or having home isolate and home quarantine mm-hmm. more aggressively.
Well, how many people have actually been tested so far in Bonner County? Do you have a number on that?
So the number that we've sent through our hospital is about 150, 151 as of Saturday. And we had two positives out of those tests, and there's still another 14 that were pending. So if some were sent out yesterday and this morning, those numbers are going to continue to change, but that's about where we're at, around 150. I'd imagine it's probably up to 160 or 170 by now.
Mm-hmm.
There's been some people from our county too that have been tested down at Coeur d'Alene, down at KMC. So I don't have the exact numbers of what they've tested for Bonner County that way too. So there's probably a few more that have been tested down there.
Mm-hmm. So if the pandemic or the disease takes a upward tick here, how many hospitalizations can Bonner General handle actually at this point.
Yeah, so our hospital is on the daily basis, we have like a 25-bed hospital. So we're a critical access hospital. With all the planning, we figured out ways that we could expand that to a higher number. And then we've also figured out how we can separate kind of different pods within the hospital to keep people that would have the COVID disease separated from everybody else, just to lower that that rate of, or the possibility of spread within the hospital to employees or other patients. So, and that's kind of a, like a flexible plan where, you know, we could increase the bed numbers there if we needed to. And it all goes kind of in stages for how many more beds we'd need to create. And it could increase, and we could, I think there was ways where we could probably get double the number of beds depending upon who was infected and how fast results came back.
Mm-hmm. But if we can keep the curve down.
The bigger, yeah. Yeah, I mean, and that's an important thing. It's what we're doing as a community. I know we don't see, it's tough to see the results when the results are a negative effect, right? When we don't see that we had big numbers and now we're making them smaller. But what we're doing is working. The social distancing and having schools closed and, you know, churches aren't having large meetings. All of those things are helping our community. And now, too, I'm starting to see more people wearing masks out in the community. It'd be great to see more businesses and more clerks and stuff wearing those as well, because that's a really simple way to limit the spread. If somebody's infected, they're going to reduce their spread of the disease probably by like 90-95% if they just wear a mask. It's a real simple thing. Wearing a mask doesn't hurt the economy. And it shows that that person cares about those others around them. It'll show that businesses care about their clients because they're trying to keep them safe. So hopefully more local businesses and grocery stores will kind of get on that bandwagon and support that. So all the things we're doing do help. As far as how many could we see kind of infected in the community, that's a really tough thing to guess. If we look at Blaine County, which is, you know, another Idaho kind of smaller town or smaller county, we can guess a little bit because they had a lot of infections within that county. I mean, there was about half of their emergency department physicians became infected and they had to shut the hospital. Granted, they didn't really have a big heads up that the disease was coming, so they were caught off guard. And we've been fortunate that we've been able to prepare more than that, and we're all wearing masks to kind of help protect ourselves that way, and different types of masks in the emergency department. But how many could become infected in the county? That's tough to guess. If we just didn't do anything and we looked back at how we were acting back in, you know, December or January even, and just our daily habits, we would probably see thousands within the county infected. And that would put a lot of stress on the hospital for just the regular hospital beds. But also we have a very limited number of ventilators and machines to help kind of blow air into the lungs, even if people aren't ventilated. And that's where the biggest pinch would be seen.
People that really need that critical care wouldn't necessarily have it available if we get overwhelmed by the number of cases.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, we talked and planned about how we can get more ventilators and the local percussionaire company that makes those has helped kind of keep some of those available for us. But it's also space and staff to care for those patients is a lot different. So that would be a big challenge because we still would need to have kind of specific rooms to work with those patients. And physically, we just don't have a lot of that stress. So we can't create an endless amount of critical care beds. So we've got backup plans if we need to do that. But hopefully the community will kind of stay unified, and some of the basic steps that everybody's doing with really aggressive hand washing and maybe some more mask wearing out in the community when people are close together, as well as, you know, keeping that 3 to 6 foot distance. Those things will all be really important. Mm-hmm. As we come up on the governor's stay at home order, like potentially ending on the 15th, is that right?
Yeah, that's with the original.
We'll,
Yeah.
yeah, so we'll see kind of what's going to change on the state level for recommendations. That's the biggest question now among a lot of healthcare providers as well as a lot of government officials. It's like, now that we've taken these steps and done all the stay-at-home orders and closed schools and closed churches and closed a lot of restaurants and bars, what's the next step? How are we going to kind of maintain the economy but maintain a safe level for our community and our hospitals and hospital workers? And how can we return back to more to a, not necessarily what we consider a normal way of life as we thought of it back in January or December of this year, but what can be something that's a little closer back to
yeah,
that.
At least headed that direction.
yeah, and that's going to be a tough question. That's going to be kind of a point where we're going to have to be flexible, because it's undoubtedly going to, as things will loosen at some point, then we're going to see infections rise again. And then it's going to be a balance of, okay, what sort of things do we limit to keep that infection rate slow and low enough where the hospitals can handle it and take care of everybody and get everybody a ventilator that needs it.
Well, we only have time for another question or two, but one thing I wanted to ask about, I think most people here recognize that our frontline nurses and doctors and staff are putting themselves out there and that they are at risk. And I wonder how all the folks at Bonner General are coping with that.
You know, now that we're a couple weeks into all the anxiety and stress about getting everything planned and changing a lot of routines, everybody, I think, is adjusting really well and kind of accepting the changes as what they are, and realizing that there's things that we can do to stay safe and keep our patients safe. So the community has been great in giving a lot of support, and all the mask donations and some businesses and different families and patients have brought in food for the staff. So those things have been really great. And, you know, for sure there's still some stressors going on, but we're not as stressed as a lot of the staff out in New York City, where they're really swamped and bombarded. So I feel like we've had the opportunity to prepare and kind of get ready for things, and that's been great.
Are there any specific things that people in the community can do to help our healthcare workers? You mentioned mask sewing, and there's a lot of that going on, so that's great.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is, like, remember, we're still there. We're still open 24/7. So if people feel like they're having a heart attack, or if they're having a stroke, or if they've fallen and broken an arm, we're still there. You know, if you've got a belly pain that's getting worse and you have a fever and you think you have appendicitis, please don't wait a week. You know, it's okay to come on in and get checked out. That's what they're there for. We're starting to see some of those things either just not showing up or showing up delayed, where those are things that we can take care of really well. We've got great treatments for those. And it's important that people come in for those when they need to, so that we can treat them early on before they get so sick. And the risk of, you know, getting infected in the hospital right now with COVID, right, we think it's still pretty low. You know, we're with our testing ramping up, I think we're going to be able to separate patients and kind of make that diagnosis a lot earlier to help protect patients, whether they have COVID or whether they don't. So I don't want people to sit at home and be suffering thinking that they can't come into the hospital and get checked out. Mm-hmm. And as far as what they can do to help us in the hospital, is more about what they're doing outside of the hospital. And that's where it's, you know, avoiding some of those big potluck dinners with friends, making sure that they're washing their hands when they leave the house, washing their hands when they get home. And if they're going to go out to the grocery store or out to different businesses where they're going to be talking to people within 6 feet away, you know, wear that cloth mask, because that's going to help limit the spread, and that's going to help our community. And that will be the biggest thing that keeps our numbers down in the community and helps the hospital.
Well, Dr. Hans Hurt, thank you so much for talking with us, and our best wishes to everybody there at Bonner General and the work, this really important work that you're all doing.
Yeah, thank you, Chris. Have a great
thank
day.
You. Yeah, you too. Bye now. If you've just tuned in, this is Community Connections on 88.5 KRFY, and that was our talk with Dr. Hans Hurt of Bonner General Health, recorded on Monday. I'm Chris Bessler, the show host today. Next up is our concluding segment for today's show, a talk with Bonner County Clerk Michael Rosedale and Elections Supervisor Charlie Worm about all the changes for voters in the upcoming May 19th primary election. Due to coronavirus restrictions, all voting will be conducted by mail using the Idaho absentee ballot process. Michael and Charlie detail about those changes in this segment, and there's also detailed information on the Bonner County website at bonnercountyid.gov. Another good source of information about the primary is the Election Central on sandpointonline.com. And one date worth noting, on April 28th, Sandpoint Online and the Sandpoint Reader are hosting a candidates forum that will be held online with candidates in contested races. You can see more about that in the Reader or on Sandpoint Online. Disclaimer, my own day job is with Keoki, which produces Sandpoint Online. So with that, here is our talk recorded Friday with Bonner County Clerk Michael Rosedale and Elections Supervisor Charlie Worm. Michael and Charlie, thank you for making time to talk with us here.
Thanks for having us on, Chris.
Thank you.
We have a lot of questions about the upcoming election. It's surely going to be one of the strangest ones in living memory due to the changes that are being necessitated by the coronavirus outbreak. But actually, at first, I wanted to ask, how are things going over in the Bonner County Administrative Offices?
Actually, it's going pretty well. They've implemented a sort of a stay-home order for everybody that can work from home. They're allowing to work from home. They're spreading it around. I'm staggering my staff around. Elections is running pretty hot simply because we have the elections. We can't really throttle back on that. But I have the courthouse throttled back quite a bit and other offices. But it's sort of a ghost town in here right now.
But people are staying safe. That's the important thing.
Yep, that's the plan.
Yeah. Okay, well, on to the election talk here. Thanks to the restrictions that we have in place to help prevent the spread of the coronavirus, the Idaho Secretary of State is requiring all voters in this election to vote by the absentee process. Now, this is for the May 19th primary election that's coming up. And the first question to you, Charlie and Michael, would be, so how is this process going to work?
So, functionally, the difference is going to be, on election day, normally, people would go to their polling place and vote. Or they could come into the office and vote in person absentee. And I want to reiterate, that is not how it's working this time. This time, the state is requiring, based on the governor's order, the state is requiring that everybody vote in absentee only. So everybody who wants to vote must request an absentee ballot, and we will mail it to them, and then they have to mail that or bring that back to us, drop it off by hand. But they have to request the absentee ballot, which we will mail out to them. That's the big difference. The other difference is they have until May or June 2nd to get that ballot back to us. So there's a little extension of time simply because some people are going to be caught off guard on Election Day and find out on Election Day itself. But they can register and request that absentee ballot on Election Day because they have 2 weeks to get the ballot and get it back.
So when they request it on Election Day, that would be by either mail or can they do it via the county website?
It'll have to be via email or via the Secretary of State's online registration. We have to receive it. We can't receive a request. We can receive a request for that by email or somehow, but we can't have somebody like send us a letter that they date on May 19th and then we get it later. We have to receive the actual request by May 19th. And it can be via email, phone call, by registering yourself at the Secretary of State's website. Obviously, email or registering yourself at the Secretary of State's website is the best way to do it.
The phone call is not going to work. We actually need the signature on the form.
That's true.
Okay. So and they could also send you this can be conducted entirely by mail if people don't have access to a computer.
What they'd have to do is they have to get that form to us. It's a request for an absentee ballot, which has you put your critical information there, and whatever party you are, then you pick the ballot that fits with that party. And there are different options based on what party you're registered as or if you're unaffiliated. So you have to fill that out and get that back to us.
Okay.
You have to get back to us by May 19th.
Okay. So what are the key deadlines that people should be aware they need to meet since this is going to kind of make the deadlines of them things a little more confusing.
Yeah, you know, really the big bad boy is just May 19th. You need to get that request for absentee ballot to us by May 19th, and you can fax it in, you can mail, you know, we have to receive it in mail, you can email it in, you can snap a photograph of your completed application and mail that text, or, you know, mail that photograph in. We just have to have it by May 19th. That's the big deal.
And you can apply online at idahovotes.gov.
Okay.
By May 19th.
Okay, okay. And there, I think you have links to idahovotes.gov, and you have a lot of information on the county website itself.
Yes.
So people can go to bonnercountyid.gov and then click on to the departments and elections department.
Exactly.
And get all this information there as well.
Correct.
Now, normally the calendar would call for early voting to begin on April 27th. Is that relevant this year?
It's not. What we're doing now, starting right now, actually, we're mailing out absentee ballots. We're doing that as we speak. We've mailed a batch of our overseas military people their ballots already. We're in the process of mailing out absentees right now, so they can start the process right now. They don't have to wait.
Okay. So, and again, you can get a copy of the absentee ballot or find a way to get it if you go to the county website at bonnercountyid.gov. This one you can actually download your computer, print out.
You can get a sample ballot. It's not a live ballot. If you copy it, it won't work.
Excuse me.
Represents all the races that will be on your live ballot.
Well, I actually was speaking about the application for an absentee ballot, because they still have to go through that process, right?
Correct. You can download that live ballot and then mail it in, or you can simply go to the idahovotes.gov and do it online. You don't even need to mail it back in.
Okay. Question here. So let's say a voter gets their ballot back, they have their ballot, and they can return it by mail. But is there also going to be a place for them to drop it off at the county administration office?
You know, we have a box right now. We're trying to work that out. We will have a place that you can drop off your absentee ballot if you really don't trust the mail service. But it's more convenient for everybody if you mail it back. We have mail postage included on every single package, so it'll be a matter of just dropping it in the post service and let them deliver it to us.
Okay. Okay, so action point for any of our listeners is go get your absentee ballot right now. You know, get that in play with a request to the county, and then don't have to wait around for anything else. You can get your votes coming in.
Right. Hey, Chris, one thing I'd like to, well, you know, and if you have any questions at all, feel free to give us a call. Our number is 208-255-3631, and we are more than happy to answer questions, especially this election more than any other, because there may be, you know, questions about this. The other thing is, you've heard flatten the curve with this whole virus thing. For us, it's the opposite end. We normally have 100-plus poll workers help us on Election Day handle the 15, 17,000 ballots. I have 3 full-time staff in elections and 2 seasonal part-timers. So as you can imagine, it's a lot going on down there. So the earlier people can do this, you help us flatten the curve. You help us move the bump from the very end sort of this direction, which would help us. So the earlier you do it, the better off we'll all be.
Okay. Hopefully folks will hear that and take that to heed and ease the burden on you guys there, and because it's just going to build up and get crazier up until Election Day, I'm sure.
All right. Well, one of the reasons I was excited to talk to KRFY was because I know the entire Bonner County listens to your station, and you have the best and brightest listeners, and so by being interviewed by you, I know that I'll be able to get this out to a lot of people. So that's hopefully they'll have a great effect.
Well, great. Thanks. Thanks for the compliment to our listeners.
You bet.
So what else would you like voters to know about this election that's coming up?
It's an important election. May primary has a lot of really important races. The governor's or the, I'm sorry, the presidential one is done, but we have a lot of really important races. We have United States senators, representatives in Congress, our local legislative representatives, we have our commissioners, we have our sheriff, our prosecuting attorney, and a lot of precinct committee people. We have judges on the ballot. So it's really it's an important one. So it's a place you can get your voice heard, and May is typically a very important election cycle for Bonner County, and I really encourage every single body to get out there and vote.
Okay. Yeah, I'll echo that. Where there are some important races, there's a county commission race that's on the ballot. There's a legislative district 1 seat that's on the ballot. Also, there are two district 7 House of Representatives seats that are on the ballot this year.
Yes.
On the Republican ballot. And you do process those votes, right? Even though most of that district falls south of us,
we process right. So we Bonner County processes Bonner County's votes. We then combine them at the state level for the totals. But we do have District 1 and part of District 7, part of District 1 and part of District 7 in our county.
Yeah, and District 7 is roughly the Sagal area.
Actually, it's what Lakeview, Clark Fork.
Yeah, it's everything south of Lake Ponderay and Clark Fork River, and east of the Highway 95.
Okay, so that's a decent number of folks in Bonner County that'll be voting in District 7 this year, and there are two
right.
contested races there in the Republican primary. So that's one for folks who live in that area to be aware of and. Figure out who you're going to vote for.
Right. You know, Chris, a lot of people have had questions on why they're doing it this year. And there part of this virus, modus operandi, it seems to be hitting elderly folks. We have over 200 volunteers that help us with the polling places every election time. And probably the average age is around 70 years old. And so that's really the prime target. And we're very worried about our poll workers. And the poll workers are very worried about their health. And, you know, we had a lot of younger poll workers that were willing to do it, not all of them. But we had a lot of older poll workers that, you know, had a really valid concern. Plus the fact that we're not supposed to congregate tightly with a bunch of people, you know, more than 10 or however many it is now, certainly not closer than 6 feet. So it really created a problem. And it was emphasized the most by Canyon County. I think they have over 500 poll workers there. The most they could get were 20 to show up, period. And so it became an impossibility. We simply could not pull off an election the way it normally happens. So the Secretary of State went to the governor and said, hey, we've got to do something here. We cannot. It just simply won't work. It'll break. So the governor said, okay, for this time only, we'll do an absentee ballot. And I think it was a good call. We're going to let everybody's voice be heard. And we're going to keep our older population safe and keep this distancing thing going. And hopefully this will blow over Bonner County quickly and Idaho quickly, and we'll get back to business. Hopefully by August we'll be back to elections as normal.
Yes. Well, but we're certainly all hoping for that. Well, thanks for the rundown. And again, folks should go to bonnercountyid.gov. There's a ton of information there on the elections page. Go to the home page and then mouse over departments, and then you can click on elections. There's a complete rundown there. Plus, you already have the sample ballots are up there, so people can see who they'll be voting for once they actually get the ballot in the mail.
Yes.
And, of course, the key thing is to make sure you make that request for an absentee ballot.
Yep.
Well, with that... Michael and Charlie, thank you very much for getting on the horn here with us.
Well, thank you, Chris. I really much appreciate you letting us give this public service announcement kind of a thing. It's a big deal to the public, a big deal to us and to you, I know, and hopefully we have more people vote than ever this way. So that's the goal.
That'd be great. Thank you. If you've just tuned in, that was our talk recorded Friday with Bonner County Clerk Michael Rosedale and the Elections Supervisor Charlie Worm. To mention it again, the Bonner County website has all the details for the election at www.bonnercountyid.gov, or check also the Sandpoint Election Central on sandpointonline.com. Our next Community Connections show will air next Tuesday, April 21st, at 8 a.m. with hosts Phil Huff and Julie Calamine. I'm Chris Bessler, and I'll be back next Thursday, April 23rd. Till then, have a safe and healthy week.